Welcome to the Trade Show Podcast, the home for conversations with global leaders in the trade show and events business. Our show will bring you face to face with experts who speak about the possibilities and trajectories of this $50 billion industry. I'm your host, Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation visitor engagement platform, where our mission is to make conversion easy. Welcome to this episode of the Trade Show Podcast. Thank you for listening and your continued feedback. If you have suggestions or you want me to dig in with a specific guest, please write to me at shubhanjan@pitch.link or message me on LinkedIn. Both links available in the show notes. My guest today is Kai Hettendorf, one of the most prominent thought leaders in the global business events industry, building on a decades-long legacy of transformation and innovation. He serves as the managing partner at JWC, the globally leading management consultancy specializing in the exhibition, trade fair, and conference industry.
The post-pandemic recovery, with the growth taken for granted from the very low base after the pandemic sent us to, that is completed. So the growth is now coming from actual industry growth and not from recapturing a size we had before. By 2019. That also means that growth is more uneven. There are some markets and regions that grow significantly faster than other markets and regions. But globally as a whole, we believe our industry will grow by around 3.3% annually in the years to come.
In his decade at the helm of Paris-based UFI, the Global Association of Exhibition Industry, Kai spearheaded numerous initiatives and projects to develop the sector, drive public awareness, and grow the association's reach and relevance. As chair of the Joint Meetings Industry Council, JMIC, a global council of international and global associations serving the business events industry, Kai led advocacy efforts, including the Global Industry Manifesto, which created a joint narrative for the entire events sector. Working with industry associations and global organizations such as UNFCCC, OECD, and ISO, he set up support initiatives, including the Net Zero Carbon Events Initiative. Kai's work in the events industry has been recognized through numerous awards and recognitions around the world. His previous career also includes transformational leadership positions at Messe Frankfurt and in marketing, strategy, and communications, as well as in strategy and product development in the ITC and media industry for the Deutsche Telekom Group, the DPA Group, and a fintech startup. A journalist by education, Kai has reported internationally, working for broadcasters like WDR and Radio Bremen in Germany, Euronews in France, the BBC in the UK, and The Voice of America in the US. He holds a master's degree from American University in Washington, D.C. and studied in Dortmund and Edinburgh. Kai currently lives in Oslo, Norway. Now, on to this insightful session with Kai Hettendorf. Kai, welcome to the Trade Show Podcast. I am so glad that you could make time and come to the show, and we will talk hopefully about a range of things, including the new report from JWC.
Well, thanks so much for the invitation and for having me. And yes, I think we could spend hours. So I'm curious to see which topics you've picked for today.
Let's start with the GIPR report itself. What sort of struck me, because you know that I spoke to some of your colleagues last year about last year's report on this show. What struck me is the depth and the width of this report is much larger, much wider. And the second thing is your multiple siloed rankings based on certain attributes, right? These are the two, what you call multidimensional rankings. Tell us, how did this come about? What made you think that it's time to do a multidimensional ranking for this report?
Sure. I mean, first of all, when you had Lorenzo and Vijay on your show last year, they could rightly say that that edition of our JWC GIPR, as we call it, the Global Industry Performance Review was the best and biggest and boldest to date. This year, we are twice as voluminous. Last year, we had around 400 pages. This year, we are clocking in a close to 900 pages of material. And it's been quite the project, I can tell you. And me having joined JWC at the beginning of the year, I got into it when they were already in the midst of it. So, but the thinking behind it was, whereas last year we took a deep dive into three regional markets that were most cited by our clients and the industry as the markets to watch, the markets where there would be a lot of development. We expanded that this year from three markets to 33 exhibition markets. And we gave ourselves a framework for each of these 33 markets to look at the economical situation in the market, to look at the infrastructure and exhibition industry in the market, and then to look at how the companies are doing in that market, how that respective market has developed, and what we foresee, what we forecast as a development up until the year 2030. And if you do this exercise 33 times, you end up with a lot of pages and a lot of insights. And this is why this year the whole report runs at close to 900 pages, because we didn't drop anything. We kept the global economic perspective of the industry. We looked at the growth rates of the industry as a whole. We kept tracking the top 40 players by organizer revenue, by total revenue. We also expanded the chapter in the end, global trends, industry trends, and added a whole chapter on what we see happening around artificial intelligence. So all of that is now really, really the biggest piece of research JWC has done in the existence of the company, which is almost 20 years by now. We are super, super proud of it. And we are super, super excited that it gets the positive feedback from our clients and customers that we share it with.
What would you say are the primary highlights of the findings?
First of all, the primary highlight is this industry will continue to grow. The post-pandemic recovery, with the growth taken for granted from the very low base after the pandemic sent us to, that is completed. So the growth Right. is now coming from actual industry growth and not from recapturing a size we had before by 2019. That also means that growth is more uneven. There are some markets and regions that grow significantly faster than other markets and regions. But globally as a whole, we believe our industry will grow by around 3.3% annually in the years to come. Again, market by market, this rate will differ accordingly to whether you're a fast-growing market or a mature market. The second main point we see is that, yes, the space or floor space or the sales of floor space have recovered, but in many, many markets, they haven't caught up to the level of space sold before the pandemic. But as the revenues have kept up or caught up and exceed the 2019 numbers, obviously we are selling more. But a smaller share of what we sell as an industry is floor space itself. So the share of services, the share of ticket sales, the share of sponsorship sales, the share of subscription sales, all these shares of sales are going up, which shows that as an industry, we are really evolving our business model. And I think the third and last trend is what we tried to capture in these rankings and these lists that we've published now about the most attractive exhibition markets in the world. Historically, as an industry, we've looked at the size of a market defined by the number of shows or by the number of venue space available. And then the bigger, the better. Today's reality is more complex. There are markets that are very, very attractive. There are markets that are maybe not as developed, but provide a lot of competitive opportunity for organizers going into these markets. And there are markets that simply excel because of the quality of their business ecosystems that are great places to do business in. And so we looked through all these lenses. We looked at these 33 markets that we covered and listed them alongside these specific criteria. And this is causing a lot of conversations in the industry as we've just released it.
One quick point, which of course you explained a bit, but I would like to sort of touch upon that, is that the growth primarily is coming from raising of prices and not so much as real growth in terms of square footage or booths or more exhibitors coming in. So essentially the unit prices have gone up, and that initially I guess got justified because of COVID, that post-COVID prices have gone up and so on. So my quick question to you on that is that a sustainable engine for growth, or would there be and what kind of corresponding rise in costs did it entail?
Well, we've been through a phase of rather high inflation globally after the pandemic. So if you look at the purchase price parity in these days, you see that between 15 and 20% is on average what the costs have gone up for the organizer. So obviously you had to raise prices correspondingly to make up for these additional expenses on your end. So, but we do see this divergence between value and volume. We do see a higher share of revenue being generated out of services, meshmaking services, rigging services, food and beverage, all kinds of digital add-on products that are becoming ever more relevant in the bottom line for the international organizers. As I think as an industry, we are migrating away from simply having people in a space and providing an opportunity to meet, to actually facilitating a lot of these conversations and facilitating a lot of these meetings through digital services and products. The more we gather data, the more we can monetize this data and make it available and actionable for the participants or for the attendees of the shows. And this, of course, is an additional revenue source that the industry did not have 10, 15 years ago. So, of course, that as a new that there are new services that are being sold, and that raises the amount of revenue from services beyond the level of raise you have to implement to catch up with inflation.
How familiar are exhibitors with these add-on services, which are essentially supposed to help them get better ROI from your study? Do you see any indication? Because when I talk to exhibitors, typically I hear that, oh, we have been fleeced for every additional television and for every additional thing. So we are trying to see how we can avoid taking additional services from the organizer. Because, I mean, again, these are all anecdotal, not a researched feedback. But when I have conversations, this is what I hear. So how is there any data on how welcoming are exhibitors?
I think what you're describing is a show-related services sales. Right. And again, there India is a different market than, say, the US, is a different market than the UAE, is a different market than, say, Australia.
I agree.
And there are different traditions and cultures in how the suppliers are embedded into the business model, or whether the organizers themselves are running services, offering services, and providing them. So, yes, of course, you have to watch the charges you pass on. We are very familiar with a big discussion in the US about the costs to attend for the exhibitor. And if you squeeze them too hard, they flinch, obviously. And you don't want to lose your customers. So this is an ongoing conversation about striking the right balance. Because on the other hand, the suppliers say, hey, our prices have gone up as well, and we need to refinance what we are providing.
Sure.
I think in general, there's an understanding that prices need to rise to make sure that services can be provided, and that some costs are simply higher. If labor costs go up, the service cost goes up. Right. But also at the same time that if there are exaggerations, that those will usually be reined in by the market.
Right. Right. And just so that you know, that most of my conversations are happening with exhibitors and organizers in the North American and European market. I'm not hugely clued into the India market. Just so that we are clear where my information is coming from.
Then I gave you the right examples from the US here.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, so my question is that, is there any data you see whether people are welcoming these additional services which are supposed to actually help them get ROI? I'm not talking of food, but I'm talking of the digital services that are there or the concierge service that you mentioned. Are these being welcome? Is there any data available? Simple.
We don't have the granular data on the show level.
Okay.
But obviously, if revenue rises over a number of years, that needs to be an there has to be an acceptance behind it. Otherwise, the revenue would not remain sustainable in the bottom line.
Right.
I think actually from my work at UFI before joining JWC, we've rather seen the pressure from the exhibitors towards the organizers to provide more data-driven services,
right,
to provide more data-driven engagement opportunities, to widen the scope of offerings to allow them to make better connections on the show floor. So it's actually customers that were asking for improved services and products.
Wonderful. And do you see, especially in the context of Europe, is GDPR or the privacy laws, are they a problem? Do you see anything from your research?
No, because within the system of GDPR, it is clear that the individual has to allow data to be used.
Right.
And the organizer is, if you wish, the custodian of the data, and
right,
then allows a supplier to work with it. So the relationship, who owns the data, who may use the data to provide a service, that is clear, and I'm not aware of any major issues within Europe.
Okay.
Where you have issues is when the GDPR system interacts with other spheres of interest in the world, where there are different systems in place that are not that focused around the security of the data of an individual.
Right. So tell me, just to take a step back, what made JWC decide to take a 3-market focus study to 33 markets this year?
Simply the fact that so many of our clients asked us specific questions about individual markets. And if you look around, there's very little research that covers that on the market level and on the national level. And some research that existed has been discontinued. So we are seeing this as much as a service to the industry as we see it as a necessary base for the industry to have reliable data to work with.
Right.
Ultimately, someone has to do it, and we agreed that we would simply get to it and do it.
And when did you think, that doing a segmented ranking or applying a multidimensional framework would be sort of commensurate with increasing this number from 3 to 33?
That's a little bit of a chicken and egg question. It's as we aggregated the data and analyzed the data, we saw that it will allow us to compare markets along these criteria. And, if you go through the whole report, we take many cuts through the data. We take many perspectives. So we can, whether you are looking into a geography or whether you're looking into a market segment, whether you're looking at the strategies of the top companies or whether you're looking at destination positioning, you will find your cut through the data. So one of these data perspectives became a comparison of these 33 markets. And so, we decided to add this perspective, and we decided to add this cut through the data. And then we produced these lists and rankings to provide the clarity if you're looking at how do markets compare by attractivity. Now, this is not something that if you're an organizer, you can have at the end of your process and say, so we go to markets number 1, 2, and 3 that have the biggest competitive opportunity, because you will have your strategy, you will have your markets that you are in, and you have your markets that you want to expand in. But as you evolve your strategy, and if you're looking at entering new markets, you will have your approach. Do you want to go where there are tried and tested markets and enter the competition? Do you want to go to markets that aren't that discovered yet? Do you want to go to a market that is where it's the most easy to establish a company and a business? So depending on your priority, your appetite for risk, your competitive positioning, you will have different answers. And these rankings are a good early step on your journey before you then obviously have to look into the industry you want to serve, the market you want to serve, and the customer base you want to take with you.
Yeah, I mean, as you indicate, it's not an easy, simple decision. I mean, this data obviously has immense value, and especially once this is done over the next 4, 5, 6 years, and you can see the dynamics playing out, you'll have a better understanding. One will have a better understanding. For example, I mean, ease of doing things, if that's the factor, then maybe I'll land up in Singapore, but Singapore may not be offering me the size of market that I'm looking for. So those challenges remain, right?
Of course, and you will have to balance your needs and interests.
Right, right. What are the factors which made India the number one in the attractiveness silo? Is it the size of market? Because there are still a lot of concerns about the
I mean, India obviously does not have the world's largest venue space available, right? I think you're sitting at 600,000 plus square meters of total venue space in the country. 25 venues, I think, in our database that we're covering. You have around 60 organizers active in your market, and of our top 40 list, around a dozen of the international players are active in India. So there is a good developed market that has more venue space now than it had 5 or 10 years ago. And some of your new venues are absolutely world-class. We don't need to go through the list. India has come a long way in the last 10 years. Add to that, India is number 2 in Asia by GDP and is forecast to have the largest economic growth, right? So trade shows, business events follow markets. So if the industry is growing and the country is growing at such an immense rate, the exhibition market will grow. And what puts India on top of this ranking here is the expected growth of the exhibition market size. Now, our midterm projection until 2028 sees an annual growth of 9.4% on average for the Indian exhibition industry. And this is the strongest growth that we foresee, strongest growth rate that we foresee in any of these 33 markets. And that, combined with growing infrastructure and a more mature industry, puts India on top as the world's most attractive market. If we go simply through the numbers, that's not an editorial decision. That's a purely data-driven decision. That's a purely data-driven ranking.
It's time for a short break. Stay with us. After the break.
So again, what we did when we analyzed this, and it's in the outlook part of the report, we drew a map and gave ourselves a matrix, a value matrix of products and services, and we used the value for the customer on the x-axis and the value for the business on the y-axis, and we placed products and services that are driven by AI on these respective axes to see where are services that actually move the needle.
You are listening to a Bizcast Audio Original. Podcasting is one of the fastest growing content marketing avenues today. We can help you exploit this largely untapped marketing opportunity. We can craft your audio strategy and leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that smartphone penetration provides. It is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to target audiences. Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for the Trade Show podcast and founder of PitchLink, the visitor engagement platform. Let's dive right back into the episode.
Let's move to AI, which is basically, I think, that's upfront in everybody's mind, right? And AI is not only impacting the exhibition business, it's impacting everything. So it is like an internet kind of moment, right? Which impacts everything. So and you wrote a very interesting article on where the AI is sort of meeting the event business. Where, according to the report, what do you see as the biggest areas of impact that AI is going to have in the short run?
I think, first of all, we have to acknowledge that the evolution of AI is really comparable to the evolution of the internet or the mobile phone. When we are looking at new technologies that left not just a mark on the industry, but also changed the industry. But just as it was with the early years of browsing and the internet, AI and AI tools and AI services are developing at such a rate that you see a lot of products or services that are being rolled out now becoming obsolete or no longer functional just a few months later. There's such a dynamic in the development. It's like the early browser days when you had Netscape and Internet Explorer and Safari, and they were rolling out new features and functionalities and changed the coding all the time. So websites were suddenly looking weird 1 week later, 1 week after they had been programmed to be optimized for an earlier version. So there's a lot of dynamic in the space. I think what we've seen over the last 3 years is, and an organization like UFI have tracked that, how we as an industry are opening up to using AI and then implementing AI applications into the way we work as companies and businesses. And that a small but growing number are building their own AI solutions based on some of the AI platforms out there. So they develop their own proprietary solutions based on these platforms. What we haven't really discussed much as an industry is how to drive value for the customer, for the attendee, and how to make money with AI-driven functions and services as organizers or operators. And I think this is the conversation, and that's where you referenced my article from last week. That is the conversation we need to have now as in the industry going forward. As we have learned the basics of AI, as we see what works, what does not work well, and what can we make work, that we look at products and services that provide value to the exhibitors and visitors, and that we look at products and services that actually provide us with a revenue or profit potential. So again, what we did when we analyzed this, and it's in the outlook part of the report, we drew a map and gave ourselves a matrix, a value matrix of products and services. And we used the value for the customer on the x-axis and the value for the business on the y-axis. And we placed products and services that are driven by AI on these respective axes to see where are services that actually move the needle, right? Mm-hmm. And you have something like curated content with session summaries. So AI capturing the content of conference sessions or sessions of on the show floor. That, of course, has some value to the exhibitors and visitors, but it's already become a commodity. So it can't really be monetized well for the organizer. You have, obviously, qualitative sentiment analysis that organizers can do during the show and then analyze post-event that provide a big value for the organizer, but are essentially invisible for the customer. And you have areas like value-based pricing that are providing value to the customer because you pay for the value from that space, from that exact positioning, and of course, improve the bottom line of the exhibitor, of the organizer significantly. So they are sitting in the sweet spots. And we believe that the conversation for the next 12 to 24 months should no longer focus on how can AI help us to write better marketing copy or to streamline sales outreach, but should really focus on how can we use AI to improve the outcome for the attendee at the show or before the show or after the show. Because what AI ultimately drives is this ongoing transformation of our industry from being focused on a few show days a year into something that covers ideally the whole year. And we call that the impact gap between two shows. Others call it omnichannel 365 engagement. We are increasingly filling the time between shows with smaller shows, with digital content, with surveys, with engagement. Most of these channels are digital, and most of the channels can be driven by AI-driven services and products to really evolve from the show centricity to a deeper customer relationship and fuller monetization. And I believe that's a conversation that we will have going forward much more intensely compared to the last 1 or 2 years.
Do you think that the association-driven shows are in a better position to do this because they have the capacity to bring the attendees as well as the exhibitors in the same platform on a non-show time frame? Or is it something that any organizer will be able to achieve? Because, I mean, we know that building a community is extremely difficult.
2 or 3 years ago, I had a few conversations with organizers when I was still on the association side with UFI. Right. And they were asking very probing questions around how we keep the UFI community engaged in between the UFI events. And I think that serves as an indicator to your question. A well-run association will be able to engage with its membership year-round and have a vital base of active members in its activity channels, be that research or education or advocacy, or be that around the events they organize. Now, organizers, legacy-wise, have focused on the main touch point, the event. And so, yes, association organizers have a lot of the pieces of the puzzle together if they have a well-run association to maintain a consistent outreach and to maintain an ongoing communication and dialogue with their member base, i.e. customer base, if you look at them as organizers. So for profit organizers, public organizers, family-owned organizers can learn from that to some degree. And at the same time, if you are a really, really big organizer, to retune your machine, the machinery of your brand of international shows to the tune of year-round engagement is a big ask and a big challenge to organizations. So remember that the events industry and the big players that are at the top of the food chain of the events industry today have primarily grown out of media companies that were monetizing their subscriber base to events in addition. Yes. Now, the print materials, especially the industry media, printed industry media disappeared because of the high costs of distribution. And then the events became the core business. You've now seen many organizers buying back content business or setting up content businesses again as a means of engagement. So in a way, we are going full circle to where we came from in the 80s, only that with the digital channels of engagement and the opportunities of AI, we have a totally new toolkit available to distribute content and are no longer relying on just printed matter to be shipped around the world.
Where all do you think AI will, I mean, again, I know it may be repetitive, but I'm just trying to suss out something more. Which are the areas where you think AI will make the most impact? Again, when I talk to people, I hear matchmaking to be a very popular idea that AI will do a good job of that. What does your research tell you?
Monetized matchmaking is as close to the Holy Grail as you can get because no one got there yet, right? To monetize matchmaking, to get matchmaking done right, that is not intrusive, but just natural. There are many good solutions out. There is no excellent solution out yet. But my answer may probably surprise you. The biggest benefit, the biggest asset our industry has from AI is the fact that it is so damaging to the public discourse. And as AI is supercharging content production, we are having a crisis of authenticity in all channels of digital media. The majority of content that you now see on social networks is either completely produced by bots or at least partially produced by AI. You always have to verify now what is real and what is fake. And that's the biggest driver and biggest motivator for people to come together in person, to look at new products, to talk to each other, to share ideas. Face-to-face meetings, business events are really becoming the bastion of trust in a world that is primarily digital, where you can't be sure that the conversation you're watching actually took place.
Right.
But let me assure everyone that this conversation is real and is really taking place right now.
Absolutely. Yeah, so authenticity, I think it is becoming increasingly difficult because I've seen some footage, I'm sure you have too, which are absolutely Hollywood quality being done through AI with a day's effort, 3 minutes of video, incredibly, incredibly good, featuring the president of the United States and so on. And it looks very, 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 very real. And that's in video. So when you're talking of articles and reports and such, it's far simpler to get it done. Obviously, when you look closer, the quality will never be as good or it will be repetitive. It has its limitations. But I think the premium that it puts on the authenticity which the in-person industry provides is not comparable. Anything else you want to highlight before we move on and talk about the fun thing that I wanted to do with you about the 11 star experience?
I think it's time for the fun things.
Okay, good. So I wrote to you that there is this interview that Brian Chesky, founder of Airbnb, had given Reid Hoffman a few years back for a podcast. And he spoke about this thought experiment that they had inside Airbnb, that what's a one-star experience and what could possibly be a 11-star experience for Airbnb customers. So as somebody who has looked at exhibition and trade shows so close, not only as you're in your role at JWC, which where you're seeing data, but your role and your work with UFI, how would you define a 1-star, 2-star, 3-star, 5-star, 8-star, 11-star experience for attendees?
The worst that can happen to you is that you can't go to where you want to be, right? I mean, so the 1-star is if for whatsoever reason you're impossible to attend the event that you've been waiting to attend. Now, there can be a weather-related flight cancellation, that can be a war situation, that can be so many different things. If you can't get to where you want to be, that's the worst thing that can happen to you in a way. On the other side of the spectrum, I've seen the happiest people leaving trade shows when they had good conversations that led to good orders, when they had fresh thoughts to take away, and when they made new contacts and met old friends again. So if you've ticked these four boxes, you've produced the perfect event. There are many, many comfort factors around that: quality of accommodation, quality of a venue, and to stipulate this feeling of this was a great event that I'm just leaving. I think 80% is on the organizer and the show, and 20% is on the venue and the surrounding. And I would always argue for venues and organizers to work together to make sure that they create the best possible physical space for people to feel comfortable in to achieve their objectives. So what moves it from a 10 to an 11 is the quality of the infrastructure, the quality of the space that people are using. Yeah. Is there daylight? Is there, how's the food and beverage? How's the Wi-Fi? Because we do need digital. And that differentiates a great show from an excellent show.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, I was speaking to someone about this and he said that how many shows have you gone where in a large venue, there are people sitting on the floor because there is not enough sitting for them when they want to take a break.
And then they sit on the floor next to the restrooms because this is where the power plugs are that they need at 3 exactly. o'clock in the afternoon to recharge their device. Exactly. Just seen pictures of that again this morning. Yeah.
Really? Yeah. I think just to touch upon venue 20%, organizer 80%, what is the role of the exhibitor?
Well, the exhibitor uses the services and support from both the organizer and the venue, right?
Right.
I've been an organizer and I've been the association representing the organizers in the venue. So for me, the exhibitor is the customer. And I have to do everything that makes it easy for the customer, for the exhibitor to have a great show. Now, they, of course, should buy the right services and shouldn't cut back on spending where it's useful for them and make sure to provide their visitors then a nice atmosphere, a good cup of coffee and a place to feel welcomed, right? In the bus of an exhibition hall, to provide a space that feels intimate and quiet enough to have a deep conversation about business, that's a big, big value in itself. So I think the role of the exhibitor is to then again make sure their customers, their leads, feel welcome and feel comfortable in the surrounding of the booth.
Right, absolutely.
PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high-quality engagement between buyers and sellers. Through its presentation and discussion modules, sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement process. PitchLink requires no installation or download, contains and manages the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without interruption. Connect with us on LinkedIn or visit tradeshowengage.com. That is tradeshowengage.com.
Guy, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. And I hope that you were able to talk about the report in the parts that you think is important for the listeners who are looking at this. Do you think we have sort of missed out on anything while we spoke about it?
I think we covered the main headlines, right? The industry will continue to grow. Growth will be more uneven. Growth will be driven by services, less by space. So we don't need to chase every last square meter. We need to provide great service. We spoke about India being on top of the world in one ranking now, which is new for everyone, including for India. Second number one spot of the world's most populous country. We touched on AI as I think a topic everybody is really, really interested in right now. I think we got a good package.
Wonderful. Guy, thank you so much. I hope to have you back on the show soon enough.
Anytime you reach out, I'll come in.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a lovely day.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes featuring great conversations on engaging your booth visitors and maximizing your ROI from your trade show investments. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening. Thank you for being with us today on the Trade Show Podcast, the podcast of record for the trade show and events industry. Here we talk to movers and shakers of the $50 billion trade show industry and identify ideas, challenges, tactics, and strategies to leverage the first-party intent inherent in the trade show business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, These are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and implement some of the ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of the Trade Show podcast. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platform like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it. This is a Bizcast original podcast and is produced for PitchLink, the next generation visitor engagement platform, where our mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Shubhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.